Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Hi there and welcome to today's show. We're on to episode 2 and we're looking at influencing from the middle. So if you're a people leader, a supervisor, this should be very, very familiar to you, and it can be very challenging when you have to influence your boss and yet you have people either alongside you or a team that you're responsible for and you need to influence. We can often get caught in the middle between the team and the team that you're responsible for. The team lead and the team that you're responsible for. And so leadership is making you accountable to being able to influence in really, really challenging situations. So it's a crucial skill, and it's helpful in building yourself a reliable and effective leadership style. So, Rachel.
It's a lot to cover in this conversation. I love this one. I, in my corporate career, have been in this situation a lot. We used to talk about it around being the meat in the sandwich, where you're getting squished from the top and pushed up from the middle. Yeah. So, look, in today's conversation, we are going to explore the role of the people leader and how you can use influence both to influence your boss and influence your team and out from the middle to do your job more effectively and just feel better, more comfortable and more competent at what you do. So in what's going to become our usual format, we'll run this podcast in two parts. The first will take 10 minutes, no more than that, to discuss three leadership essentials on how you can influence better. So this will just be giving you some tips and tricks that you can take away and implement tomorrow in your role. We'll make them memorable, and the whole point around the leadership essentials is that you can put them into action quite quickly. If you've got a little bit more time, this conversation is something that really resonates with you. If you are a people leader and you want to stay with us for the coaching approach, what we'll do is we'll take 15 to 20 minutes to discuss this kind of topic in much more detail in how we would in a coaching conversation. So we'll be using some models and theory that we may use in a one-to-one coaching conversation with an individual. And we'll also ask questions and get you to think in different ways, totally flipping the subject on its head, so you can have a much more nuanced view of what influencing from the middle really means for you.
So, leadership essentials number one, understanding different types of power and authority. Everyone really has a preference in these. And there tend to be about three main domains, being personality, expertise, or position. So in terms of personality, it's our charisma, it's our sort of individual magnetism. And we all know somebody who's got that sort of personality that really jumps out at you and you would do anything for them. They just have that ability to bring you along with them. So that's people who use their power and derive it just by being them in many respects. And then of course you know the people who would use power. Might be because of their rank or their role or their title. But they tend to hold all the power. You get quite a lot of people with command and control type styles of leadership that use that particular domain. So we have personality, we've got power, and then we've got the people who've got the expertise, we've got the people who've got all the knowledge, and they have a specialism, and they're probably very, very ingrained in one particular facet of their role. So I always remember my mum had glaucoma, and we went to the ophthalmologist, easy for me to say, but he was a guy that specialised only in glaucoma, and there are lots of sort of conditions of the eye, but that was his thing, you know, just that one very fine
expert.
So he would tend to get a lot of his professionalism, his power from his actual his knowledge. So In terms of how does this help you in as a leadership essential point, it's really important that we can identify which particular preferences people tend to have in their behaviour. Mm. So by doing that, you know what is likely to get them on board with any ideas that you might come across. So you might notice that people have used their power in quite a social context. So you could think about the latest Black Lives Matter campaign, and that's a very social movement, and people want to express their influence on whoever in that way.
Mm.
Conversely, you can know people that use power quite coercively, and they do that by exerting pressure or domination or threatening kind of behaviour. So understanding these different types of power and authority really, really essential as the number one leadership essential point, I think, on influencing.
Mm. And just to add on that, be thinking about and reflecting on what is the power structure in your organisation, because this might not be you, but it might be that some of those power structures and ways are very prevalent in your organisation, and therefore you are getting sucked into them anyway. And you can sometimes find your behaviours, you're acting in a way that doesn't feel natural to you, but it's because that's the culture of the organisation.
I was just about to say, that starts to create the culture, doesn't it?
Of course it does. And just reflecting on that and being aware of what is happening is perhaps a place to start from in this. And you talked about that coercive power, and it sounds very, very negative, and it is, but actually a lot of people do it because they think that's the right thing to do.
Mm.
And they're the nicest people. You know, you can be like, I really like my boss, but they're very coercive. But you've then got to think about, well, what are they role modelling, and what am I picking up and influencing down?
Yeah.
And I know I've been in situations where I've perhaps not liked my behaviour, but it's behaviour that's been done to me, and I'm doing it almost unconsciously down. And it's only when somebody like holds up a mirror to you and you're like, I don't like what I'm doing here.
Mm.
But the organisational culture and the power structures within it have almost become, had a hold on you.
Sure.
And likewise, and one we have to be careful of, is that kind of having skill and being a specialist, where you use that kind of power by talking in riddles that people don't understand, with abbreviations and models and terms that almost, you know, you can be the most inclusive person, but your language is excluding people because they don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So have a look at that. Think about some of the people in your organisation. Start with yourself. You know, where are you drawing your power and your authority from? So number two, Rachel.
So number two is around working with push and pull styles of influence. So if you've not heard about this concept before of push and pull, it's really around, pull is around motivating people, where push is around moving people with reasoning and offering incentives and the like. So we've got two kind of ways to influence.
Yes, so if you think about some of the people that you work with currently, or indeed, you know, you work with in the past, see if you can sort of recognise some of these styles that are being in play. So when we think about push, have you seen people use force? So somebody may say something like, do this or the consequences will be X. It's like a threat, a punishment, a cost. There's always feels like there's always some sort of damage attached to it. Often find it in turnaround situations where there's sort of no option. Individuals are either in a risk or in danger.
I'm going to put my hand up in this one. I used to use this one a lot when I was a leader, but you don't want to look like the bad guy because you're the people leader. So you'll say, oh, look, it's not me that's asking for this. It's the big boss. And he wants it by Friday because it's really, really important.
And how did you learn that?
Because that's what my boss did to me.
That's what happened to you.
But this is the thing, we don't want to be seen as the one. Or
no.
Some people are very comfortable just going, I need this by then, do it.
Yeah.
other people that perhaps that's not your natural style, but your role modelled it, you might say, oh, look, I asked for extra days, but no, the boss is insistent, they need it tomorrow, sorry, you're going to have to work late.
And if you haven't had coaching, and if you haven't, you know, sort of done these leadership workshops, that's what happens, isn't it? You just follow what somebody role modelled for
you. It's the organisational culture, that's just what you do.
Yeah. So how about exchange as a push style?
So this one we see happen a lot. So somebody might say, I'll do this and I'll give you that. But it would be really useful if you do this for me.
It's a bargain.
It's a bargain, a bribe, a negotiation. It's how a lot of work's done. We call in a lot of favours, particularly when the stakes are high, when we're at the deadline. It's a negotiation tactic. It's a sweetener. It can also be used socially. Friendship, oh, there's a wine in this for you. Or, you know, there's a whole host of things that can that you can use for this. But it is an exchange.
Yeah.
Just be aware of it.
Yeah. Just have a think about whether you use those as a style or people in your team. But it is, these are all about preferences, and it is important that you know and you can identify what people do prefer.
And what your style is.
For sure.
So let's look at pull styles of influence. So this would be associated with kind of just using your personality, using your personal magnetism, using your natural approach. Some may call it charm. Others may just call it inquisitiveness or your skills and expertise. So it's often used when the scope for individuals to choose, there's more autonomy in the situation. A lot of people are more comfortable using this when there is more time,
yeah.
I must say. But it will depend on how your organisation views autonomy. There are some organisations where people have little autonomy because it's run like a machine. And that's fine if that's what that organisation requires. Organisations where they're more creative and autonomy is required to problem solve, you might want to think about how can we use more pull factors. So a good example of a pull factor will be when we're jointly problem solving, where there's an issue or a problem, but actually rather than going to a push factor, you give all the information to the group, communicate, share the problem and invite participation. So we talked about this in our first podcast around dealing with times of change. The same thing goes really for the premise of how you might problem solve in this way and invite participation. Information is key to this being done successful. And this is often where, you know, people can find it very motivating.
Yeah.
And your team member, when you think about it, times when you've brought your team member in to help you solve a problem, you're usually stressed to the high heavens. They're usually really pleased and go home and tell their partner that they were brought into something really important to help problem solve. So it's about thinking about who might actually come at this from a different mindset
does,
and an energy level.
It does pull them along, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it
you
does.
Know, the people feel so valued for their opinion, and you know, there's nothing better than building good team camaraderie around that joint approach, if you like. It makes you and us, and not a me and you. So they're the push and pull styles of influence, and I think it is worthwhile working out who's got preference for which ones. If you're either wanting to influence above or below. Leadership essential number 3. So we've concentrated on identifying where people get their power from, what's the preference, and how people influence in terms of the style, do they push or pull. So number 3, finding out people's reasons why. It is so useful if you can find out what people's reasons why are. And so when I'm talking about it, it's understanding what is their fundamental driver in their role. You know, quite simply, why do they come to work? What is it? What drives them to come to work? It could be really simple. It's about paying the mortgage, putting food on the table, clothing your kids, getting that extra holiday, whatever it is. But it tends to be more complicated than that.
I think especially when people are more senior in the organisation, it's far more complex because work tends to mean a lot more to people.
Sure.
And we talked about the scarf model in our first podcast.
Yeah.
Those drivers around status, certainty, autonomy, fairness, relationships, they really tend to come into play amongst senior leaders much more because work is more their life than perhaps people in your team. So I think a good way to find out and a good tip for putting this into practice as a leadership essential is to really, when you're influencing up, be to think about the leaders that you work with most and that require the most from you. And just be thinking and noting this down in your iPad or on your in the back of your notebook, whichever you use, 5 words that you would associate with what's important to that person. So it might be that they love to be liked, or they like to always have the last word in a meeting, or they've got a daughter that they're very fond of. It might be that that leader likes to look and feel like the boss, their hobby's golf, or that they ask a lot of questions. There'll be something that it gives you around their style and what's important to them. You know, do they like to be more analytical? Do they like to be certain? Are they decisive? Do they like to know all the facts? So write down those 5 words. When you're thinking about people to the side of you, you have the great benefit here of having much more accessibility to their time.
Yeah, so you're usually a bit closer to
them. You can usually grab a beer with them. You can usually grab 5 minutes after a meeting and just say, look, can I just ask you, what's important to you in this project? What do you want to get out of this?
Yeah.
What are your drivers for this? Number one, people will be really taken aback and really pleased to be asked. Number two, they'll give you valuable information that you can use in influencing them. And then with your team, again, you're managing them. You have much more control here. There's exercises that you can do. We have a worksheet, don't we, that we give out when we're running workshops with team leaders around how they can motivate their team better. Around just giving them words that they can tell you what motivates them and what's most important to them. It might be achievement, promotion, relationships, fair, autonomy. It might be, you know, having work-life balance, their kids paying the mortgage. Do the same exercise for your people, but again, you're going to be able to put much more detail on the bone here because you're going to see them in action more, and you're going to be able to just outrightly ask them, what's most important to you on this project? What do you want to get out of work?
So those are your 3 leadership essentials: finding your people, finding your reason, people's reason why, working with the push and pull styles, and finding and understanding their different types of power and authority.
Curious to know how a coach would approach this? Stay with us for the Scaffold Coaching Approach.
We've looked at some just leadership essential skills for influencing above and below. But really, to become a successful leader, we need a more nuanced approach to this that's probably a bit more unique to your situation. And with that view of reflecting on what your personal style is it push or is it pull? And expanding upon this, ask yourself, what is the big picture? How expansive can you be when you consider who you need to influence? So it might not be just thinking about for your boss, for example, oh, they're really driven by status, they play golf. It's really important to them to ask a lot of questions, but also be thinking about he really listens to such and such I've noticed in meetings he likes to invite this individual. So it might not be somebody that you necessarily need to influence, but actually thinking about who the people that you need to influence seek as their counsel. Who is it that they go to? And it might be that you can triangle in a new way of influence. Is there anything that you'd add on that, John?
Yeah, there is, because I think if when you're influencing down and across, if you're looking for somebody to help you, it might be just providing a resource or some support. It might be just an piece of information that you hold. How helpful would that be to another group, to another division in the organisation, to a number of other individuals in the organisation? And just think about what that big picture gives you in terms of influencing people by sharing some information that you have. So it does work both ways, but I think often we can find ourselves sort of just cocooned in the team that we're in, or in the sort of the division that we're in. And actually, a bigger picture view gives you so much more.
Just picking up on that one though as well, content. Particularly in certain larger organisations that I've worked in, that's that push and pull style. Information is often seen as power.
Yeah.
And even though you all work for the same organisation, you often hear, oh, don't tell that team about that yet. Yeah. Let's just make sure we've got this right before they come in and spoil things.
And that goes back to what we were talking about before. You know, with where do people get their power from? You know, when people have got a specific bit of knowledge, you know, it is a bit of a lever. It's a bit of a bargaining tool. And you're right. And all these things, and all the things that we're talking about here in this pod, they're all interrelated. Coaching approach number two. Here's a question for you. How much value are you adding? So when you're influencing people in your team, is it developmental? Is it technical? Even behavioural? So ask yourself how much value you're adding when you're influencing other people in your sphere of influence.
And that would go for above and below, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
And particularly to the middle, and that does talk about that bargaining.
And conversely, you can think about how much value you're adding for yourself.
Mm.
You know, when you're influencing other people in the organisation, one of the things that we come across regularly, Rachel, is a situation where an individual's working almost above and beyond the remit of their role, but they're not sharing that or showing that to their boss. So, to demonstrate this, let's use both of our characters, Janet and John. Now, we met them in our last podcast when we talked about the SCARF model, which was status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness and fairness. But let's just think about them in terms of how they influence people in the value that they add. So Janet...
Well, she's a bit of a workhorse, isn't she? She always goes above and beyond.
Yeah.
She's always the one that's willing to put a hand up and volunteer for more work.
Yeah.
She's a yes person. She rarely disagrees with the bosses above. She's very happy to toe the party line. John likes to do things his own way. Very, very popular with his clients. Yeah. People tend to work around John a bit more, but really likeable chap. Can be known as being a tad difficult at times. What's going on with them two potentially with the value that they're adding above and below?
So let's start with Janet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that she's somebody who probably values recognition quite highly, and therefore she's willing to go above and beyond. And so in her mind there, she's adding lots of value. Potentially, she might be doing the wrong thing.
I wonder about Janet. She's adding a lot of value, but she's expecting her bosses to recognise that. So recognition is very important to her, but she's not confident enough to put out, this is what I've done. She's expecting them to recognise her because that is what she values.
Yeah.
Status is important to her, but also recognition is too. So there she is, working her arse off, putting her hand up for everything. She's had one promotion.
Mm.
That's reinforced that recognition because she's got that early recognition. But here she is a year on, again, working doubly as hard, expecting that recognition. But is she actually influencing the people ahead effectively?
Well, it's the double-edged sword here. Is I think that when you say that she's expecting the recognition, I think she values the idea that people should be recognising, they should be seeing it. But potentially, if you don't show somebody that, then they don't know. They're on with their own thing.
Yeah, if this was a coaching conversation and we were coaching Janet, what we'd be exploring with her is these are her preconceived ideas for what leadership is, and is she expecting that from her team and managing her team in that one way, rather than actually really getting to know her team and understanding what influences and motivates them better. And likewise for her leadership team, she's just thinking, I shouldn't have to actively influence here. They should just realise that I do a really good job.
Exactly.
And is she giving as much attention to influencing and noticing what resonates best with her leaders rather than just expecting them to recognise her?
Yeah.
So I'd be probing around those with her. An awareness piece.
I think this is a lot of people. They add a lot of value. They do their job. They're very proud of the output that they... Yeah, but it's almost like it's a reticence not to I'm being too big-headed.
Yeah.
If I say that I've just done this.
Yeah, but on that, and that's a really lovely trait that a lot of people have, that they're very modest and they think if I just work hard, it will get recognised. But what you've got to realise in influencing people is it is part of your job, particularly with your senior leaders, because they are so time poor. A senior leadership team will have hundreds of people to be thinking about. They're so time poor.
Yeah.
They need you to tell them what they need to know, but they also need to tell you where they need to recognise other people, where they perhaps could be better at something. Mm. And I think there is a real art to managing up and saying, well, this is what I've done and this is how I've done it. This is all you need to know. Now, that might be seen to some as a little bit of like chest beating, but actually they don't know what they don't know, the senior leadership team, and they're really time poor. So if you're expecting them to just sit in their merry way and come and ask you or ask other people or look for what you've done, well, you're not giving them the credit that they're super busy anyway.
I think it's interesting when you think about quite a fairly large organisation that's got maybe a couple of levels of leadership, and we're talking about people that are in the middle here in terms of their influence. So they've also got people below them, but maybe a couple of tiers above them. And if they're not telling they don't necessarily need to tell the top person, but perhaps they do need to tell their immediate person that this is what's been going on this week. And you would hope that they will be a sufficient leader in being able to say to that ultimate boss, this is what Janet's been doing.
Yeah.
And I think that is, you'll know yourself in these in your own organisations, where people might go to the other side of this as well and be telling everybody about everything that they've done.
It's a fine line, I can't believe that
you've done all that, because you spend most of the time telling people that you're doing all this thing. So there is a fine line. But I think it's very interesting in terms of actually being able to influence. What value are you adding, and how much do people know about it?
And the influencing is part of your job. And I think when we look at the example of Janet, she's very much a doer. And does she need to spend a little bit more time on actively thinking about how she's influencing to add more value? John, on the other hand, though...
less ambitious. So John, on the other hand, I think because of less ambition, he's probably not trying to influence above and around anyway.
I do know about him is he's very, very popular with his clients. So his influencing skills are probably extremely polished, because he's probably found a way to influence up via his clients.
Yes, yeah.
Which is also, there's no better way than and there's nothing wrong with asking a client to send your boss an email saying how well you've done on something.
Yeah.
And that could be that could be a technique that John's using, which is often why he's left alone.
Mm.
Next one, John.
So, coaching approach number 3. Is there room allowed for people to challenge you back? So what are we looking at here? Well, we've looked at the big picture. We've looked at the value, whether either adding above or below the line. Is there room allowed for people to challenge you back? We need to make clear distinctions when we influence down, I think, Rachel, that allow people to challenge back, or otherwise we're just being very pushy.
Mm.
So in terms of using this as an example, you could make suggestions and back them up. But back them up with your reasoning for making that suggestion. And what's your intention behind that suggestion that you've made? And I think there's two important follow-up questions to ask beyond that. How do you actually see this? And have I missed anything? So in that challenge, if you can ask those two questions, asking that person how they see it and what do they think that I might have missed, it comes back to that joint problem solving thing again,
it does.
Where it's a we rather than a me.
Yeah.
So I think you've got to create that space for people to come and challenge you back.
Yeah.
If your door's always shut and your head always down, or you're not in a lot, or you're just not very visible, you're not very present, I think people would find that kind of leadership behaviour difficult.
I just want to chime in on here. There's not many leaders that don't say, I'm open to feedback today that we work with.
Yeah.
Most do. What I think you've got to be thinking about is, are you using push or pull when you're doing this? And what are you role modelling? Because a lot of people, middle managers in particular, will have invested quite a lot of work in something. So you're still doing a lot of work when you're in the middle as well. So you're invested, and you're emotionally invested in that piece of work.
Yeah.
So when you ask for challenge or feedback, and it might be from somebody above or below, when they give feedback, and you're often open to it, but what you do straight away is you start to justify why you've done what you've done. Your answer is immediately defensive. You go on the push to a, this is why I've done it, and I'm justifying why I'm right, which says to people immediately, you might be thinking that's a relevant thing to do, to justify why you've done what you've done, but it immediately says, I'm discounting your feedback because this is why I'm right. And we do this because we've emotionally invested in that work. It's very difficult to do this, particularly if it's somebody above or below, and probably even harder below, because you think you're right. But to just say, take a minute when somebody gives you some feedback on a piece of work that you're close to and say, oh, I'd not thought about it that way. That's really interesting. I need some time to digest. Can I come back to you on that? And resist that urge to go, well, actually, if you read point four on it, the data would show that that is why it is like it is. Do you know what I mean? And what, it doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong. What it matters is that you've created a space to say, I acknowledge the fact that you have given me feedback. Now, the power that has in terms of influence on how you listen to other people and how you treat other people giving you new information is more important in influencing than actually whether you were right or wrong, or what your answer will be to that piece of feedback.
Yeah, it's the behaviour of allowing the time. I totally agree. And it's not something that we generally do. We tend to knee jerk because we ask for the feedback, and then actually we don't really like what's being fed back, because that isn't what we did in the first place.
No. And you really do have to check your mindset for that, but understand its role in influencing.
Yeah.
So the fourth point then is around influencing somebody in a difficult conversation. How would you go about influencing somebody that you don't like, that is difficult, that you might feel very emotionally connected to, something where you've invested a lot of personal time, or whether actually it's just been deemed as plain unfair and how it's been handled and treated?
I know what you mean. I mean, we all have, and we all have to have, like, really difficult conversations. And so I think the way that you would approach this in terms of a coach is to ask about, how much of a contribution do you think that you might have had in this particular situation?
Mm.
And if you can acknowledge that with the person that you're having this conversation with in the first instance, and be upfront about it, it again becomes a we conversation rather than a you and me conversation. If you want to influence somebody, and you want to make them over there and you want to make yourself over here, then it's going to be very difficult. But if you can come together and you're that first person to instigate that by saying, you know, I think that I probably didn't help when I told Janet that, you know, she couldn't have the newest car on the list. I think when we talk about it in those terms, or if for whatever reason we couldn't genuinely say that we were contributing to that particular situation, we may know of somebody who had, or it might have been something that happened somewhere else, or you'd seen it before. And I think on that basis you sort of normalise it. So yeah. I think that from a difficult conversation point of view, if you can make that contribution or normalise it by suggesting that you've seen it before or somewhere else, you tend to have a wee conversation. So you've got the person sat alongside you rather than in front and in opposition to you.
And then I think it's really important that you use that third point in the Leadership Essentials around firstly getting to know that person better. You know, often we make assumptions about people and we'll have a difficult conversation with them and we'll deem that we don't like them or we don't like how they're behaving in this. But actually, when you work in the same organisation for somebody, you've usually got something in common. Otherwise, the organisation wouldn't have hired you. You know, there's usually some common ground. And try and find out a little bit more about that person to find something that you actually do share an interest in. It might be as simple as football. It might be as simple as you've got children. You have a common problem. But find something that you can find some common ground with. And then once, like you've said, you've kind of sat beside them, just ask them a question around why is this important to you or what is important for you to get out of this. And you're seeking to find their why. And when you can kind of understand it from their point of view or what matters most to them, or even using that scarf model again, what is their fear factor here? What is this conversation threatening them with? You can start to see it from their point of view. Now, things might get more difficult, but what you've got to think about is, if you come from this place, what are you role modelling? How are you holding yourself? And how can you be in a kind of pull place where you're open to problem solving this together?
For sure. So those are our four coaching approaches. What's the big picture? How much value are you adding? Is there room allowed for people to challenge you and influencing someone in a difficult conversation?
So I hope you found today's podcast and conversation useful. Please drop us some feedback at leaders@scaffoldcoaching.com if you've got any questions or feedback on this conversation. And if you want to find more information or resources around this topic, do check out our website, scaffoldcoaching.com. And we've got a little button on there that is for people leaders. And you will find these points on the website if you would prefer to digest this material in written form. Hope you have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for listening.
Ta-ra for now.
Coaching.